we present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello, and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a classified ad seen in the Buchan Observer, read by Vaughan Savage.
5 foot gorilla, unwanted gift, cost £90, sell for £50.
Thanks to Philip Barker for that. Let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Mark Steele? Opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Armando Iannucci. Francis, your first traditionally easy question, whose upfront delivery made a majestic performance?
Ah, yes. Even I know this. It's a slightly rum do, actually, because Tony Blair said that he wanted to have a national conversation with us. Right, not with us specifically, not with the news quiz people, but with the whole nation, about so we could tell him what we wanted him to do. I think it was one of those things where we're not meant to speak until we're spoken to, so he spoke to us first to tell us what he's going to do anyway, regardless. Actually, he didn't speak to us, it was the Queen. But you could tell she hadn't written it herself. I don't think she, sitting there over the breakfast muesli that's come out of a Tupperware container, chats to Prince Philip. Dear, what do you feel about same-sex partnerships becoming mandatory? But they delivered the speech, and it's not very good news for children, as far as I can see, because they're going to take away school buses, and if your parents are asylum seekers, they'll take you into care anyway. A nice Mr. Blunkett is going to look after you. It was an extraordinary piece by Blunkett in The Guardian, where he said, I didn't go into politics to become the Herod of the Labour Party, the King Herod. And I thought, well, no, King Herod's probably rather left-wing by Labour standards. Also, do you know this? Little known fact about King Herod.
No, well, I have a feeling we shall.
You will be glad to know this if you don't know it already. Do you know the name of King Herod's first wife?
Yeah, King Herod's first wife?
Doris. This is entirely true. True fact. Herod and Doris were the royal couple.
I'd never watched it before, in previous years, but it's so astonishing, because you think, see, Blair keeps saying, says to every public service and every trade union, he says, we must modernise. We must modernise with new technology and all that. And we know this because he does this modernising thing through legislation that is passed by a monarch with a speech that is delivered to her by a purse bearer having gone through an equerry and a herald after she's been taken in a stagecoach, and then she summons Black Rod, who summons lords, who bangs a stick on a door and says, commoners, I'm ready for you. And then they deliver the speech that says we must modernise.
I object to the crap. The thing is that the Queen's speech is always about money and apportionment, and she's wearing the entire national debt on her head. If she took the crown off, she could sort it out for the next year.
I was slightly confused, because I watched it on the 10 o'clock news in the BBC, and the programme that preceded it ended with a man passing a 6-foot tapeworm out of his bottom. And then you saw the Queen reading out her speech, and the look on both their faces was...
It's the Queen's speech in which the government set out its bills for the coming year. Bearing in mind the controversial nature of many of the proposed bills, commentators warn the government could face a middle-class revolt. That's like an ordinary revolt, except Marks and Spencers provide the sandwiches. On Thursday, the government announced that Tony Blair had achieved his asylum target. He's had Claire Short and Robin Cook locked away in a hospital for the criminally insane. Oh, 2 points to Francis. Mark, who hasn't got Georgia on his mind anymore?
Oh, yeah, well, this is the man who used to run Georgia up until about a week ago, Shevardnadze. And now he doesn't run Georgia because there was a demonstration of about 10,000 people. And he's gone, oh, blimey, and gone off. That's just not fair, is it? How can it be that easy in Georgia? How many do we have to get? So, yeah, that's probably the answer. Now, I can't. And, of course, the other thing is it takes about 7 years to learn the names of whoever's running this thing, and you just learn the name of them, and then they're overthrown in a revolution. It's just not right.
I read that when Shevardnadze left, the interim president, the newly installed president, the first thing she did, because there's a massive oil pipeline that runs through Georgia, so that's why it's strategically important, the first thing she did was she rang the head of the UN and the head of BP to say everything was all right. it was as if Tony Blair every day would ring Richard Branson for advice. Which, of course, is ridiculous.
Ex-Soviet Foreign Minister Edward Shevardnadze has resigned as president of Georgia after a popular uprising. It's already been called a velvet revolution, partly because it was bloodless, but mainly because it was quilted for extra softness. Armando, which team kept dropping the goal but won the match?
Ah, now then. You've the only non-Englishman on the panel. You've given the Rugby World Cup question. I taped it, haven't seen it. Don't tell me the result. This is... this is the Rugby World Cup, which I gather England won. It's been great, actually, just getting interested in a game over which I have absolutely no knowledge whatsoever. The sort of the pain threshold involved in rugby is just so much greater than any other sport. I always laugh when, in the commentary, they say, you know, he's dislocated his head. His heart is lying on the pitch there, connected with one. He'll want to go and patch that up. Good job they didn't commentate on the Somme, you know. Oh, there's a little bit of argy-bargy.
So they'll be throwing their hats in the air in Passchendaele tonight.
I love sports. I was thoroughly excited by it. But, come on, it's been already about 5 days. It's too long now for it to be in the first 27 pages of every newspaper. Is it going to get to the point where they go, it's now 1 year and 9 months exactly since Britain shot... Well, England won the Royal World
no,
Cup.
No, Britain. The story today is they won't show you Johnny Wilkinson's kick anymore because the Rugby Federation or whatever has charged too much money. It costs £6,000 every time they want to show it. So the BBC have said they're not going to show it. So they'll have to, I don't know, do court drawings of it. Or.
The England rugby team has come home after beating Australia 20-17 in the World Cup final. The Australians were convinced they would win the Webb Ellis Trophy. But then Australians are all renowned for their convictions. Alan, listen to this.
Nothing you can sing that can't be sung. Nothing you can say, but you can learn how to play the game. It's easy.
Whose cordial tasted sour this week?
This is about Chirac, who was over here on a very brief visit, and Leo gave him a picture. Blair's way of upstaging Gordon Brown, whose child is too young to give him anything except possibly a full napkin, which many of us would rather Chirac went home with. Thank you. They had this notional entente, but it was rubbish. It was all spin, it was all smoke and mirrors and baby's doings. And Chirac went home, ever more convinced that... Britain should be driven into the channel.
Isn't it a bit freaky giving pictures of your little toddly kids to sort of strangers who the last time you met you had a furious row about whether or not you should go to war? Oh, this was... Yeah, I'm not sure. Does diplomacy work like this? The Cuban missile crisis was when Khrushchev said, we can put our missiles where you like, and Kennedy went, yeah, but look, here's my nephew. Oh.
That's right. If Saddam Hussein had just put up enormous posters of kittens all over Baghdad, the Americans would have just stopped and gone, ah.
This week, a difficult Anglo-French summit ended with Chirac committing a faux pas when he proudly displayed a photo of Blair's son Leo to the assembled press. Next year, the Queen is to visit France to commemorate the centenary of the Entente Cordiale, and she will celebrate in the ancient, traditional fashion by bringing back a vanload of fags and red plonk. We start round two with an announcement heard on a train spotted in the Guardian diary.
Apologies for the delay. It's due to a failed Virgin at Watford.
Thanks to Caroline Bates of London for sending that in. Francis, why might there be no smoke without fines?
Oh, the heads of all the colleges of medicine wrote a letter to the Times saying smoking ought to be banned in public... Well, it said in public places, but their definition of public places is actually offices, I think. It doesn't really mean Trafalgar Square or anything like that. Blair is his own man now, ever since Iraq. You know, he doesn't care what people think. And he's going to jolly well not ban smoking completely. He used to smoke himself, you know, Blair.
Did he?
Yeah. And then he met Cherie, and it was condition of marrying her. She said, I'll marry you if you give up. So on the eve of their wedding, he gave up. That was just before he married Doris, his first wife. Loads of doctors smoke, in my experience, don't they?
Doctors smoke like chimneys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There isn't any other way of smoking, Simon. I mean, that's why only why people say they smoke like chimneys. There isn't any other way of smoking. I mean, what else would they smoke like? Hamsters? There wasn't any point putting it that way. You should say doctors smoke. Not like chimneys.
You're quite right.
I mean, Santa doesn't come down their nostrils. I read that.
An alliance of 13 Royal Medical Colleges and 5 medical faculties have called on the government to ban smoking in public to prevent passive smoking. Most non-smokers find cigarette smoke unpleasant and irritating, while most smokers find non-smokers unpleasant and irritating. Mark, why will football terraces be chanting lyrical from this week?
I'm not quite sure who it is that's had the idea, someone in the government or something, that they've asked Andrew Motion, the poet laureate, to find the football supporter that can come up with the most poetic chant. And when I read this, reminded me of... I was in Shrewsbury a little while ago, and I was sort of what a very quaint little sort of place, very beautiful, cobbled streets, all that sort of thing. And then there's this major public school there. And then right next to the public school, there is this football ground, Shrewsbury football ground. And I looked at it and thought, I bet they're the only fans in Britain who chant in Latin. You're tourdeous and you know you are. That's
well, it's not just Motion. There's a whole panel of judges. I think Barclays Bank are sponsoring it. And they said one of the judges is somebody called Ian McMillan, who is poet in residence at Barnsley FC. I don't know what you do if you're poet in residence at Barnsley FC.
You can imagine that moment at the job centre when you... Coronation flag seller and poet in residence at Barnsley FC.
The poet laureate, Andrew Motion, is chairing a panel to find new chants for football terraces. He said the judges would be looking for clean songs, which shows just how much he knows about football. Mr. Motion claims the energy, wit and ribaldry of the football terraces are akin to folk poetry. Which, by coincidence, folk poetry is exactly what people say every time they hear one. Armando, listen to this.
All this year I'm off to sunny Spain. Viva España. I'm taking the Costa Brava plane. Viva España. If you'd like to chat to Matador in some cool cabana and meet señoritas by the score. España, por favor.
Armando, why are we all off to sunny Spain this year?
Well, this is a survey. Every week there's a survey. This week the survey has said that France is no longer our number one holiday destination. We are so appalled by how the French treat this photograph of Leo Blair that people are going to Spain more. They were talking about what the number one British tourist attractions were. And he said right down at the bottom was Merthyr Tydfil, which was the least visited place in Britain. And it said it had 4,000 visitors this year, brackets, none of whom were there as holiday makers. And I don't know if this was the same story, if it was just like right next to it in the Times, but there was a story about a high percentage of Americans visit Scotland because they think haggises are wild animals. That can be killed, whereas, of course, we know that they are, in fact, the stomachs of rugby players found on the field at half-time.
Armando, Americans may think the haggis is an animal, and you will ridicule them for it, but
yes. The
Scots think it's edible.
Well, pardon me for coming to the land of sunny delight. It's thoroughly edible. It's very nice.
Oh,
Oh, it is, yes.
Hello.
If you at home think haggis is nice, could you press the red button now?
Surveys of holiday habits out this week reveal that the Brits are increasingly holidaying abroad, especially in Spain, while the majority of American tourists who make it to these shores genuinely believe they can go haggis hunting in Scotland. Brits spent a record £27 billion abroad last year, though £20 billion of that was Elton John's flower bill on a weekend break in Milan. Alan, when it comes to the origins of English, why are we talking Turkey?
Well, how long have you got? What do you really want to know about Sanskrit and the Anatolian Plateau? I spent 6 years doing this at university and I can remember all of it. English is an Indo-European language. Basically, it's Sanskrit refined, but a new philological tree, as it were, linguistic tree, has now claims to have discovered that early Anatolian, which is about 8,500 to 9,000 years ago, bears significant cog words, as we used to call them, with other Indo-European languages, and there's a number of English things in early Anatolian. Right, puff off, you will find that. Any Anatolian 8,500-year-old cave, it will say things like that. But it's just very simple linguistics, Simon, really.
We're so embarrassingly bad at learning other languages in this country generally. We could get, like, a group of four of us from England could go to France for the weekend, and if at some point one person says to someone, well, merci beaucoup, then everyone else would go, oh, you've picked up the lingo.
Computer analysis suggests the roots of the world's most widely spoken tongues lie in ancient Hittite, the language spoken by Turkish shepherds nearly 8,000 years ago. The Hittites' agricultural nature was reflected in their language, which has many different phrases for the different qualities of soil, the various types of rain, and the comparative attractiveness of sheep. The only non-Indo-European languages now spoken in Europe are Finnish, Hungarian, and Prescott. Before we start the final round, here's a classified ad seen in the Southern Daily Echo.
Jigsaw puzzles, 1,000 pieces, £1 each.
Thank you, Zelda Rand from Southampton, for that. Francis, listen to this.
All right, gentlemen, let us begin, huh? Said Senor Pizzicato. My little Toby, I have never heard a tuba is playing the melody before. Let us hear some more, huh? Oh, dear, said Toby. Oh, I hope it'll be all right.
I'll give an extra point to anyone who knows who that was.
Danny Kaye, and it's Tubby the Tuba.
Tubby the Tuba, but not Danny Kaye.
Sure, it was Danny Kaye. Victor Ball?
A British cover version.
Surely not Britney Spears. Come on, you tease. Who was it?
Norman Wisdom.
Norman Wisdom.
Francis, why are tubas going down the tubes?
Well, there's a crisis in orchestras. Apparently, young people no longer play big instruments like tubas and double basses and trombones and bassoons and things. So Estelle Morris had a press conference saying she wants to give things like tubas street cred. Those were her exact words. I have no idea what she means by this. Actually, I rather hope they don't get street cred, because the first thing that'll happen will be that Blair gets himself photographed playing the wretched thing. And says, yeah, nice. Yeah, in Ugly Rumours, you know, I was always mainly the tuba man, essentially.
Is it likely they'll have street cred and they'll be like kids in hoods going, yeah, give it up large star for the umpire massive? Is that going to happen? Got a kicking bandstand.
Estelle Morris has launched a national campaign to revive school children's interest in playing the tuba, the bassoon, the double bass and the trombone. Ignorance of orchestral instruments is so bad, many British school children believe a bassoon is president of the United States. Mark, why don't fairy tales end happily ever after for little girls?
It's an American.
Michael Jackson,
of course. No, it's not. No, it's another American. It is some American academic who says that... well, she actually said that for children to be exposed to stories about beautiful princesses was harmful because it gives them the idea that only pretty girls get the prince in the end, which, as we all know, is not true to real life. Fergie, anyway. And she wants them to be more like real life, more sort of Sarah Ferguson figures and fewer beauties with beasts.
A quality American scientist fairy tale such as Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty harm children by teaching them that good looks matter more than a good education. The five most frequently told fairy tales are Cinderella, Snow White, Little Red Riding Hood, Sleeping Beauty, and the New Labour Manifesto. I love a fairy tale myself. Who will ever forget Rumpelstiltskin, where a beautiful princess is taught how to spin straw into gold by Robin Cook. Sorry, by a hideous Armando, whose change of accent wasn't a stroke of good luck.
This is this week's stroke question. A woman in America had a stroke, and a partial stroke, and she recovered, but could only speak in an English accent. She couldn't recover her American accent, and she says English words like Trocadero and Red Bull and things like that, and she's ostracized because people in America like the English, but they don't like Americans who put on English accents. But at the moment, she's thinking of coming over to England and living like an English person. She's just going to sit in market towns at night, off her face on Bacardi breezers, and looking for something to do.
Imagine if she comes here and tries to apply to the Home Office and reason for wanting to come to Britain because I've got an English accent.
Yes.
Watching old videos of Terry Thomas films or something like that. What a frightful shower. Absolute shower.
Tiffany Jones from Indiana has been left with a British accent after suffering a stroke. She developed the condition called foreign accent syndrome. She recovered her voice only to discover she spoke with an English accent, which immediately ruled her out of the lead role in Janet Street Poir, the musical. Ms. Roberts decided to publicise her case to encourage other sufferers to come forward, but so far Lloyd Grossman remains at large. Alan, why are women saying no, no, no to being turned on?
It's the orgasmatron. It's a great story, actually. An American, I think his name is Stephen Purley, has come up with a device which is inserted in a woman's buttocks, but not in the conventional, or indeed half-conventional way. There are electrodes in the woman's brain connected to a button in her buttocks, and if she presses this button, she has an orgasm. And he goes around the bars of Detroit and Oshkosh, Wisconsin, trying to find women who will sign up to this, and he can't find any volunteers. I mean, even I have better chat-up lines than that. But apparently he's discovered that women can press this and they have automatic orgasms. I remember that woman in When Harry Met Sally. That was really, I mean, it's like that. Anyway, you can get it for 4 and 8 pence in Detroit.
If you're going through customs, does it set it off?
Well, only if you're very lucky.
An American doctor has invented the orgasmatron, a device that can give women orgasms at the flick of a switch. So now all you have to do is to remember to buy her flowers on your anniversary, chocolates on her birthday, take the rubbish out, walk the dog, put your pants in the laundry basket, leave the toilet seat down, take your feet off the coffee table, and stop being such a useless idiot. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, this is a letter that appeared in the Times a few days ago from a reader of theirs called Sarah Scrivener, and I suppose it's a small complaint, really. Sir, last night on the tube, I was sitting opposite a smartly dressed elderly lady who was reading the Bible and eating a cake. On finishing the cake, she dropped her letter on the floor. Assuming this was accidental, and to save her having to bend down to pick it up, I did so and gave it back to her. At which point, she leapt out of her seat with surprising agility, stuffed the litter down the back of my neck and gave me a cuff round the ear.
Mark.
Now, what was this in? The Oxford Mail. This is a quote from a UFO expert. And he's, it's accompanied by a picture that obviously that's no good on the radio, but I promise you this is a picture of just a cloud. That is just looks like a cloud. But this UFO expert has convinced people that this is clearly a spaceship. What else could it be? Well, possibly a cloud. So he says, I took a picture of a cloud, but it looked like a chicken about to take flight. This is his evidence. When it came out, I spotted a small egg-shaped object with a bizarre plasma tail. He said, and it's not the first time my camera has pictured something strange. In 1995, I took a picture of a spherical object outside the Marston Co-op. Explain that.
Armando.
This has been sent in by Simon Wills from St Albans. It's an advert from a cycle accessories catalogue. A dog dazer. Acclaimed by cycle tourists and postmen alike, this handheld unit emits a burst of ultrasonic sound that dogs find highly disturbing. Effective up to 40 feet, just point it at the dog and press the button for 2 to 3 seconds. Note, this device is not effective against deaf dogs.
Alan. Well, mine, Simon, comes from the Lancashire Evening Telegraph and Citizen. And it says, in a recent school questionnaire in his Blackburn constituency, only 7% of sixth formers correctly identified Jack Straw as their MP, and only 12% knew he was Foreign Secretary. 16% said he was in The Wizard of Oz.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final score. Francis and Mark have 14, but Armando and Alan, this week's winners with 18 points. And before we leave you, here's an item from the Times TV listings.
BBC One, 1 p.m, ITV News.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Wheen, Mark Steele, Armando Iannucci, and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggett, and the news was read by me, Vaughan Savage. The chairman's script was written by Lucy Clark, Simon Littlefield, and George Poles. And the producer was Simon Nichols.